Restaurant Unstoppable, episode 1063 with Dan Haggerty.
It doesn't matter if they're a regular. It doesn't matter if you've, you know, seen them at another restaurant or they've been in a few times. Like, treat everyone. Every time someone comes in that door, treat it like it's their first time coming in. You got to wow them every time. Even if the last time they were here, they said it was the best experience they've ever had in their life. Well, that was last time.
Are you ready for it factors, success stories, failures, and bombs of restaurant industry knowledge? Then, join Eric Cacciatore and today's incredible guest as they share what it takes to become unstoppable.
This podcast was made possible by Restaurant Systems Pro, and we need to let you know that every second and fourth Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, Fred Langley, will be going live, where he'll cover what you need to know about running a profitable restaurant from soup to nuts. This live event will reveal the steps to manage the service and financial goals for your restaurant's productivity. To learn more, head to go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. This episode made possible by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, use cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way. This episode brought to you by Owner.com. Owner.com is the leading all-in-one platform for restaurant marketing. Owner.com powers everything from SEO-optimized websites, direct online ordering, automated email and text marketing, built-in loyalty programs, zero commission delivery, and branded mobile apps for your restaurant that's integrated right into your POS. With Owner.com, there's no contract, no hidden fees, and nothing to lose. Join thousands of restaurant owners using Owner.com to grow direct online sales, save thousands in third-party fees, and simplify their online ordering presence all in one. Book a free demo today at owner.com/unstoppable and see why owner.com is the number one rated restaurant marketing software. Imagine you had an employee who never called out, kept inventory in line, could spit out sales and cost data at a moment's notice, and saved you hours of work. You'd want to hire that person, right? Margin Edge is the boost in efficiency you need and doesn't add to your labor cost. Margin Edge is a complete restaurant management software that allows you to seamlessly manage all aspects of your business from one central location. With Margin Edge, you can track food costs in real time, make inventory faster and less tedious, easily cost out your recipes, and get a daily P&L so you always know where you stand. Visit marginedge.com/unstoppable to learn more and to get a free monthly restaurant sales report packed with exclusive industry trends, data, and insights. Once more, that's marginedge, marginedge.com/unstoppable. With excitement, allow me to introduce to you today's guest, co-owner of Industry East and Stash Box, Dan Haggerty. My man, Dan, are you feeling unstoppable today?
I have never felt less stoppable right now.
I'm psyched to be here. It's special when I get to interview people where I've patroned their restaurants on my own, you know, accord, like on my own, in my community, love what they're doing. And sometimes I worry that, like, I'm going to be a little, what's the word, bias, you know?
Judgy?
No, not judgy, but, like, what's it called when you, I always forget this word, like, when you play favoritisms to people who are close to you? Nepotism.
Yeah,
nepotism here, yeah. Like, because I love what you guys are doing here. It's my place. I love to come here whenever I'm in Manchester.
Nice.
And you guys, when was your first concept? Industry East, when did that open? Like 2 years ago?
It opened officially to the public on February 2nd, 2021.
So you're going 3 years.
3 years. the LLC has been around since 2019, but something happened there.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like a hopefully global pandemic. Yeah, it was a thing.
But, I mean, I just, you know, I like to make an exception every once in a while when I come across a brand that usually my cutoff point is you have to be open for at least 5 years.
Right.
But I think that there's something to be special, and I think that my listeners who are going through it right now, the closer we are in real time to when it happened for my guests, the more relevant it is, and I think it also makes a bigger impact. And you entertained some very rude questions that I asked. I came in as a guest, and I was like, what's your percent profit here? And you told me. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, okay.
It's right up my alley. Rude questions are where I dwell.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm feeling really confident about today's episode. You and your partners are really killing it here. Jeremy and your executive chef.
Jeff Martin.
Killing it. I can't wait to dive into your story to talk about how you got to where you are today, but let's get that motivational, inspirational ball rolling with a success quote or mantra. What do you got for us?
Ooh, if I had to narrow it down, I would say only show up if you really want to be here.
Only show up if you really want to be here. Dive into why that resonates with you.
It just, I don't know. That's just kind of my feeling every day. It's got to be, it's got to be 51-49.
Yeah.
You have to at least 51% want to be here. It's a restaurant. Not everyone wants to come in every day. Not everyone wants to cut onions for 3 hours. Not everyone wants to mop the bathroom. But you have to want to be here more than you don't want to be here. And if you don't want to be here, that's going to trickle down to everybody. So maybe call out that day.
How do you make sure they want to be here before you commit to somebody?
You know, it's really a kind of a personality thing over a skill thing. You know, you can have a bartender, let's say, that knows every drink ever made, you know, makes all his own elixirs and tinctures and all this and that. But if you get the feeling, body language, tone of voice, straight up work ethic, If that's not there, I'd rather have the girl that's, you know, down and willing to come in and wash, you know, clean the tables, clean under the seats, and learn how to do those things that someone else already knows and is maybe a bit jaded about. I'd rather have the hungry person come in and like I said, someone that, if you want to be here, not only can I tell, but everyone can tell, all your coworkers can tell. The guests can tell, you know, and it resonates across the board.
Do you know what I'm thinking about right now? So I recently had the author of The Experience Economy on the show. His name is escaping. Joe Pine. Yeah, it was a really great conversation. In his book, he talks about this idea of like being on stage and acting. You're literally like in the experience economy, we are actors. Right. We are. And have you ever gone to a play where like a middle school or like elementary school play where like everybody has to be in the play, and there's clearly the kids that want to be there and the kids that don't want to be there and that are just like, you know, a flower in the background or something.
The 20 of you over here, you're all farm animals and you don't actually say anything today. And then kid's really good. He's the star.
But like, it's funny because like you can just like the kids that really want to be there sell it, and like they're the show. They're front and center and they're putting on the show. And when people don't want to be there, when they're kids, it's funny because you're like, they definitely are being like forced into this. But like, but that energy, like, and you're on stage when you're in a restaurant. Like, you have to want to put on a show and want to act on people,
absolutely,
to create an experience. And if you don't want it permeates.
It's absolutely,
totally obvious.
You're just taking yourself, you know, your regular self, and just times 10 for 8 hours straight.
Yeah, man. 100%. Awesome.
Which is why my beard is gray.
Was it red at one point? I'm colorblind.
It was like reddish brown, and now all the red is gray. And there's still a little Hulk
Hogan. So this is what I have to look forward to right here.
Hey, man.
I'm on my way.
You'll look fantastic. I call them wisdom hairs. You'll look great.
So I'm excited to dive into your story, man. Where does it make sense to start telling your story? Take us to the beginning.
You want the story of the restaurant, or you want just where I personally started?
This is the story of Dan Hatton.
Ah, okay. I mean, it goes back. What am I? I'm 40. So my first job ever was washing dishes at 14 or 15 at a like a fancy family-owned Italian restaurant in Tingsboro, Massachusetts. It was called Jacopi's Colonel Ting Manor. It was like a, you know, shirt and tie, tablecloths, that whole thing. And it was family-owned. Like, everyone in the family was there all the time.
Where was this? You might have mentioned that.
It was Tingsboro, Mass.
Tingsboro. Okay.
Yep, just over the border, south of Nashua.
Is that where you grew up, Nashua or Tingsboro?
I grew up in Nashua.
Okay.
Yep. So, yeah, started washing dishes. It was cool because I was pretty young and I had a paycheck, which was awesome. And I got to see all the, you know, you're the dishwasher. You're kind of like, especially if you're a kid, you're there, but you're like not there, you know. People just dump all the plates off at you and, oh, the kid will take care of it, you know. So I got to see what was going on in the kitchen, but I also got to get all like the servers and bartenders' personalities because they'd come in and, hey, Dan, can you do this for me? Hey, can you do this for me? Well, the servers and bartenders would say, can you do this for me? The chef would go, get this done right fucking now. So, yeah, started there. They actually moved me up to, you know, like prep and fry, and I absolutely hated that. So I said, hey, can I, like, bus tables? Can I, you know, do this and that? And, you know, like I said, it's family-owned. They were like, yeah, you can kind of... Sure, whatever. Do whatever you want. So then I got to go out on the floor, and I was like, well, I'm hooked now.
This is where I belong.
Well, I'm making cash tips.
Right.
I get to work with all the, you know, I get to talk to people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking to multiple tables. I'm chatting. I'm moving around.
Were you going to say you get to work with all the pretty ladies?
I was going to say that. Yeah, pocket full of cash and all the pretty ladies. Hey,
I had a feeling
at 14.
This is the dream.
There's nothing better than that. Yeah, and then it's kind of, you know, obviously had multiple different jobs after that, but always, no matter where I was working, I always either was waiting tables at a place, whether it was 1, 2, 3 nights a week, bartending, you know, managing, whatever, and then did that throughout life, my whole life pretty much. And then, so I'll skip all the mishmash and fast forward to kind of when I started, I guess when I started branch out on my own.
Before you jump over the mishmash, yeah, that's what you call it.
Because I'll talk for hours.
I mean, that's what we're here to do, man. The show is multiple hours long nowadays. What was it specifically, like you said, you got to, you know, be with the people and you got to socialize, but like, what was it that really resonated with you about front of house? Why, like, what did you love about it?
Front of house is, I mean, I'm pretty outgoing, pretty type A, and I love to talk. And so, and seeing people happy, you know, people are coming in there to you, you know, they're leaving their house. They could cook chicken parm at their house, you know? They're coming out to have a nice time. They don't have to wash the dishes. They don't have to do anything. They're coming out for a nice time, mm-hmm. you know? And you add to that, you know? If you do a nice job and you're excited about making them have a nice time, it's the best feeling. You're like, I contributed to that.
Like, where else can you go and get the cookie over and over and over again in one night? The reward of seeing somebody appreciate you.
That dopamine hit of, like, you know, dropping something off at the table, coming back in a few minutes. Hey, how is everything so far? And they're like, it's great.
Dude,
you're just like,
there's a part of me, I want to start manifesting this. Like, one of my dreams beyond Restaurant Unstoppable is to create a documentary where I go do a deep dive into hospitality, like an anthropological approach to hospitality over time, but like also on like an evolutionary psychology of like, why do we give a fuck about making people happy?
Yeah.
Like, what is going on there?
Yeah.
And how is this a beneficial thing? And doing kind of like, have you ever heard of the book Sapiens?
Yes.
Like that.
Never read
like,
it, but I know of it.
Through the filter of hospitality. Or the book Drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Through the filter of hospitality. Like, that would be such a fun project. But I think there's something going on there in terms of evolutionary psychology where, like, it's a part of our DNA, a part of our genetic makeup as Homo sapien to be seen and valued in.
Yeah.
In,
yeah.
And I think that like this industry, like just feeds that like nothing else.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, true. Cause you, it could change on a dime.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if you could, you could have the happiest group of people, like, and let's say, like I said, if you're having a bad day, right, and you might just say something off color that in your brain doesn't sound that bad, but if it clicks and it, you know, it flips the switch for someone in the group, you can watch the whole thing just go, oh, and they're like, I don't like this guy, and you know what, I don't think I like this place anymore, you know, and it's like that, and but even that, I mean, that sucks if that happens, but it's, you know, you have that, you're in the driver's seat. When people, someone comes in the restaurant, like, boom, like, they're there, they're expecting to have a nice time. If they're new, they haven't been here, they're not sure what they're going to get. So you get to give them that
it's
experience.
A dance.
Yeah, you get to give them that experience every time. And yeah. I always tell all our staff, you know, it doesn't matter if they're a regular, it doesn't matter if you've, you know, seen them at another restaurant or they've been in a few times, like, treat everyone, every time someone comes in that door, treat it like it's their first time coming right. in. You got to wow them every time. Even if the last time they were here, they said it was the best experience they've ever had in their life, well, that was last time.
Yeah. You know? That reminds me of Evan Hennessy from Stages. You know that name?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome chef representing New Hampshire.
Yeah. Is that Concord? No.
Man, Dover.
Dover. Dover. Yeah, that's right. Dover,
He says 3 or 30 is what he said to me, and that always stuck with you. Whether there's 3 people in the dining room or 30 people in the dining room, it's the same experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. And you got to read the room. You got to be like, if there's 30 people in the dining room, everyone's talking. It's got a nice lull, you know, murmur to it, and everyone's chatting. If there's 3 people, you got to kind of actually back off a little, or else you're like up their ass.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Wow, man, I like your personality, but please go back in the kitchen.
Right. And full of transparency, I mean, you're a big reason why I love coming here.
Thanks,
and it's
man.
Because you're, there's always that presence, somebody here, that energy, being seen, being recognized, being appreciated. And that just goes such a long way.
That's, I mean, that's a part of it. That's one of the main reasons why we decided to go from employee to ownership, was because that's, you know, we wanted to make a place. Like, make a place that you would want to go to as a service industry worker after work. Like, where would I want to go when I get out of work? I want to go, basically, this is like, I want to make, like, my own Cheers.
Right.
Like, welcome in. Have a nice time.
So, we have 26 more years to cover until we get to present day. You're 14 years old in, I think, 26. Is that the right?
Yeah. 26, yeah.
So, math is not my strength. I'm a front of house person. You said the mishmash. So were you just kind of bouncing around, like not really? Like, what was your dream when you were a young guy?
To be a rock star.
Okay.
Yeah, obviously.
And you were in bands?
I did, yeah. I tried that out. And it's very fun. And, you know,
Is that the mishmash?
The mishmash is like, I mean, I worked at Men's Warehouse. Okay. I worked at Honey Baked Ham, which is actually, to be honest with you, Honey Baked Ham has the best chicken salad recipe I ever had.
Really?
And I
Are
didn't
they still in business?
I think so. Yeah. I know there's one. I know there's at least one down in Nashua. But they added, because I'd have to make the salads in, like, you know, the bus, like big bus tubs and big Cambros, right? And they were like, yeah, just it's like 5 cups of mustard. And I was like, mustard? My mom doesn't make it like that. It was mustard, and it had like coriander in it, and I was like, in a chicken salad, it's just mayo and celery. And then I tried it, and I was like, oh my god, mustard's the secret.
Yeah. Subtitle: this isn't your mom's potato or chicken salad. Honey baked ham,
so many places.
So I mean, like at what point do you think you grew the most as a professional before, like, really thinking about breaking off and doing your own thing?
A place that I worked for, I think my longest tenure at a restaurant, was a place also in Nashville called Stella Blue is kind of a tapas. It was one of the, it was right about the time, well, in New Hampshire anyway, when tapas was starting to get, you know, out of the
this is the early 2010s.
Yeah, they opened. We opened 2008 at Stella Blue, and I was like, well, I was like the first or second person hired, and the guys who, you know, had bought the previous restaurant, changed it to Stella Blue, did not have any restaurant experience, and they hired myself and another guy, and they were kind of like, hey, we know you guys know what you're doing. Can you help us get this restaurant going? And that was the first time that anyone had ever asked, you know, had ever given me kind of like the, hey, you know what you're doing, you know, instead of just please show up to work.
Right. So you're like, 24 years old at this point.
Yeah.
So you've been working around, you know, developing your skills, working for 10 years in the industry, give or take, with some time off doing like retailer or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what were the challenges of having somebody kind of give you that type of control and influence?
Well, at the time, as a 24-year-old who thought he knew everything, I didn't see it as like a challenge. It was more of like, wow, these older guys that have a bunch of money are asking me what I think. Okay, I'm just going to do what I know to be true and what seems to work, you know, and it worked.
Right.
And then that, it, you know, we got fairly popular, and kind of the methods that I sort of came up with as it was going, you know, like as we moved along, like ended up working. Some of them definitely didn't. And I'd be like, oh, well, it's totally worked at the last place. It's weird. It doesn't work here. But, you know,
I mean, is it worth breaking down that stuff, or is it just like little antiquated stuff that isn't really, are there lessons here?
It was basically where I personally learned, okay, I now have a responsibility other than just showing up to work and doing my side work. Now people are looking to me for answers.
Like what kind of answers were they searching for?
Basically just like the best way to set up like a POS system. I think we had Aloha there, and the guys that opened the restaurant, they came from tech.
Okay.
So they kind of knew how to run it, but they didn't know the best way to set it up. And so I was like, well, in this type of restaurant, because it was a tapas style, I was like, the dishes aren't all coming out. It's not like, you know, app, salad, whatever. You know, it's they're coming out as they're ready, and people are to share them,
right.
Which at that time, 2008, in not a big city, that was getting people to understand that concept.
Right. This is all I get.
Yeah. Or they'd be like, well, hers came out, and mine's not here. It's like, yeah, that's, you're all supposed to share.
Yeah.
You know, and even you could say that in the beginning, you could say it in the middle, and you can say it at the end, and people would still be like, well, I'm waiting for my meatballs, you know? so to
a layer of education.
Yeah. It was just kind of learning like, okay, instead of just like, here's how it works at a restaurant, it's how does it work for this restaurant? So let's shape the POS to have the food come out like this and the drinks come out like this. And so that the kitchen doesn't get absolutely buried with a ticket, you know, each ticket has 10 items on it, right? So let's stage this, let's do that. And so we all kind of learned together, you know, and it's the first time I had worked at a restaurant that had that concept too. So I was kind of like, you know, having signed on before it even opened, I got to learn how to build a structure around kind of a new concept.
You said this is like the longest tenure you had in the restaurant industry.
I was there from 2008 to 2016, holy on and off, on shit. And off.
Yeah, that's a good tenure. 10 year or eight years.
8 years. Yeah.
So, I mean, how did you grow during this time? Who was Dan Haggerty in 2008? And who was Dan Haggerty in 2016?
Still cocky at the beginning and the end, but 2008. It was more like, hey, this is a cool opportunity. Who knows what I'm going to do later on? And then Dan Haggerty 2016 was, all I ever want to do is restaurants for the rest of my life.
What? Why? Like, what was it that was, like, what was this, the same stuff that we talked about before?
Same kind of thing, yeah. Yeah, you just build up, you know, you build up your own confidence in that I have a pretty good knowledge of how this place runs on the back end, and I can use that knowledge to make people feel more comfortable in the front end, you know, just sitting in the restaurant, like having all of the knowledge of knowing what's all the ingredients in the food, knowing how the drinks are made, where things are sourced. You can you use that to make people feel like they're and they should be getting something special, but they're like, wow. You know, at Applebee's, they don't tell me where the, you know.
Well, that's part of the experience. It's like the storytelling that's involved. It's the information. It's literally taking people through a journey through a meal.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's great. It doesn't have to be transactional.
Yeah. You know? And then, again, back to that dopamine hit.
Yeah.
I was getting that every night, multiple times. And it's like, this is awesome. I love this job. People love coming in here. I'll be at, you know, shopping at Demoulas and, hey, what's up, man? Good to see you. You know, see someone outside, maybe a regular that you don't normally see outside the restaurant. And they're like, they know me from there. And they smiled. Mm. And they didn't go, oh, it's that guy. They went, hey, good to see you. I'll see you Friday. Yeah. You know, and like, that's cool. And
being
it's like
its recognized, own, being
it's,
valued,
it's its own
being
community,
seen.
You know?
It's huge, you know? Yeah. It's like, and it sounds so unsexy when you put it that way. Not to diminish like your work.
No.
But like, I think it's just a part of human nature. We need to be seen. We need to be valued.
Yeah. It's like, I did a good job.
Yeah.
And it resulted in the happiness of that group of people or that guy or whatever, you know?
Right. So 2028. Sorry, 4 years into the future. 2024, Dan Haggerty, looking back at 2016, Dan Haggerty, you had all the answers, you said, in 2016.
Of course.
You knew how everything worked. Looking back at that version of yourself, being present in that time for you, like getting back into that headspace, what were your challenges? Like, you wanted to, like, this is what you wanted to do. Like, what was going on?
Yes. Well, so at that time, I had started having a lot of regulars from the restaurant asking me to do, off-site private events and stuff like that. And so, you know, I still loved working at the restaurant, but I was like, dang, I did a couple. And I was like, wow, I just made like three times the amount of money I would make on a Saturday night doing this private event. And so I was doing them here and there. And then, you know, people would, you know, word of mouth, hey, the guy from this restaurant does these private events. And I started doing more and I started doing more. And then I started working a little less, you know, giving a shift away at the restaurant, giving two shifts away. And just started doing that. I built a little business doing that called In the Mix. And we were basically a beverage catering company.
Oh, cool.
And then I ended up leaving the restaurant eventually to do that full time. And that was wild.
Before you left the restaurant, what was your title?
Front of house manager / everything guy.
Okay. What do we need today, guy?
Yeah.
What was there, like, any animosity between you and the owners when you decided to kind of do your own thing?
No, not that I was aware of. No, they were good guys. I think we were both kind of like, I was scared to be like, well, now I don't have this permanent, you know, consistent source of income. And I think they were like, oh man, he's been here forever. He knows where everything is. He knows how to do all this stuff. And, there was probably that, but they're business guys too. So they were like, cool, go for it.
So this is 3 years before you started your own business in 2019, your LLC with your partners.
Yep.
Jeremy.
Yep.
What were the biggest challenges for you in this 3-year period from 2016 and 2019? Like, if you could do it differently, knowing what you know now, hindsight being 2020.
I actually don't think that I would have done anything differently, because everything that I did do up until that point, like, was learning, you know? Like, I took the things that worked, and if they worked, I kept doing them, and if I fuck something up, I'm like, okay.
Don't do it that way.
Don't do it that way ever again. Don't even go back and try to, finagle it. Like, literally just don't do that anymore. And I think that's, like, you know, if you're not so cocky that you can't realize that, that's, like, the best lesson you can ever learn is how to not do something.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like, once that doesn't work, don't force it.
I can't remember who said it. I think I'm listening to this book, 10X. I think it was in that book. You've heard Malcolm Gladwell talk about 10,000 hours, yep, right? Yep. What was that book? Outliers, I think.
I'm like, going to let you take that one.
I think it's 10,000 hours, like master something. You need to put 10 hours. And yep, outliers start, yep, so early that they get all this time in, and like just those repetitions. But now they're saying it's more like 10,000 iterations.
Yeah. And that makes more sense.
Yeah, and it's that ready, fire, aim approach of just like pull the trigger. Yeah. Whoops.
Hours are the correct. Hours become, you know, 10,000 hours is worthless if you don't retain,
right,
at least, like I said, at least either the knowledge of how to do something or how to not do it.
Right.
You know? And I'm a big proponent of once you know what not to do, that's almost more important than knowing what.
I mean, are there some universal? I mean, I know it was an events company, and that's, yep, not necessarily a restaurant. I know there's a lot of opportunity. I mean, is that something you still do to this day? I think
I was actually doing it. I was running both concurrently when we opened Industry, and yes, they are of the same cloth, but one is like in the mix was all logistics, right? It's catering. So it's, you know, the event's 4 hours, but really you're doing 12 hours of work,
right,
for that 4 hour event. You got to
prepping, packing,
prep,
moving,
buy all the stuff. Make sure you have most importantly access to ice.
Yeah.
Like if you're doing an event up in the mountains and it's July and you only have a finite amount of ice, you gotta figure out how you're going to make that work. And, you know, whether it's a delivery or you bring 12 extra coolers with ice in them.
There's a lot of regulations around ice, too. Like, you can't, like, put...
It's a food. It's considered food.
Yeah, it's water.
So,
you're serving...
Yep. Yeah. So you have to... Yeah, there were so many things. Like, am I going to have enough gas? It's a Saturday in the summer. If I have to leave 2 hours early because I'm going to hit traffic from everyone going up to the lake and right, I can't be late, is my trailer going to fit behind this barn up in the woods, right? So there's all those factors. And then when you get there, it's almost kind of like it's like a little black, like a negative of like a restaurant where we're already here. This is brick and mortar. Everything comes to us. We get deliveries. The people come here. In that business, it was when I rolled in there with the truck and the trailer and we started setting up the bar. Hip hip hooray, you know, the bartender's here, yeah, you know, I mean, like, you're not
talking about being seen, yeah, and valued.
Well, yeah, people come in here and they're expecting, you know, what they've heard to be true, so you have to impress them. You show up there, you crack open a Coors Light and you are, thank God you're here, you know, you can't do a bad job,
right,
essentially with that.
Well, once you get there too, you probably, unless you go out ahead of time and you kind of do site purveying and like you're like, okay,
yeah, you have
like,
to. It's, yeah, a lot. It's a lot.
Where is this going to go? Where is that going to go?
Yep.
What were your biggest challenges in this type of business? Like, what are your, like, people who have maybe thought about doing beverage catering, which I think is a great idea, especially around coffee, a coffee service too, right,
yeah,
now.
Oh, people, yeah.
Like, that's a great breakout idea.
Sells itself pretty,
right,
much.
Like, what is, like, you share a lot of the unseens of the things that, yeah, you learn the hard way, but what were your biggest challenges?
Staying financially stable because it is kind of a seasonal thing. So you have to get, you know, wedding season, you're going to get crushed. That's where you're going to make 2/3 of your money during wedding season. Then you have to have these, you have to have either have accounts, you have to build relationships, you know, so that like we used to have accounts with some bigger businesses and they would do like Friday happy hours, like every other Friday. And so that got us through.
So like executive accounts where you go into like corporate offices?
Yeah, yeah, actually.
Are they hiring?
That's not right. Right? I was like, man, these kids are like 23 and they're making way more money than I am. But so yeah, we, you know, just kind of building and that's where the word of mouth comes along again still is, hey, this guy does this business. A lot of people don't even know that business exists. So they'd hear about it and go, oh my God, my office, we usually just get Subway and, you know, a couple 2 liters of Coke for our outings. We can have a guy that's insured and licensed come and serve us booze in our office. Hell yeah.
Insured and licensed. I was hoping that would come up. Like, what, yeah, what do we need to know about insurance? And like,
so
did you ever get in trouble? Did you never not have the right insurance?
Yeah. I mean, so in New Hampshire specifically, because I could go out depending. You can get like one day insurance here and there, but I was covered. I was covered for everything. And there are very few insurance companies that do that type of insurance because it is a big liability, for especially sure. with alcohol. The license per se. So again, in New Hampshire, there's like 52 different types of liquor licenses. I don't even remember the name of what it was, but basically it was like an offsite like cocktail lounge, something or other. But basically it gave me, I could sell booze in certain spots that weren't like public. So I couldn't like set up, I couldn't just go to like the park and just set up and start right. selling drinks. It would have to be a predetermined area. It would have to be, you know, the alcohol can't leave this area. Same kind of thing that you would have in a bar, just random locations. And it's not hard to acquire. As long as you're not a felon, you can get that license.
In terms of knowing how to charge people, because like,
yeah,
like you said, like I could, you know, work 40, 60 hours a week for somebody else, or I could go off and do my own catering thing and make way more money doing the catering. How do you determine the value of what the services you're providing?
Yeah, that took a while. That was a shape-shifting thing, because I was doing it like from a restaurant perspective, where I'm like, here's my cost, here's what I should make, here's my time, and it varies a lot when you're doing the on-site events, because I mean, if you're going 2 hours either way, that's a full tank of gas in the truck right there. That's $100 just in gas.
Right.
So as you keep doing it, you go, well, you know what? This costs this and this costs this. So I think I changed it from, you know, I started doing things in tiers. I'd be like, instead of just per event giving a quote, I'd go, if you want this, it's this. It starts packaging here. Yeah. If you want this, it starts here. If you want extra stuff, it goes up, up, up. You know, and that seemed to work a little better too, especially from the customer standpoint. They like to see, okay, what do I get for this? What are my options? Instead of, what do you want? Let me give you a quote. Because right. they'll all, 99% of the time, they'll come back and go, that's too much money. I don't want to do this. And you go, that's literally like the low end. And if you think that's too much, I don't know. Maybe you should just buy a couple coolers too, like, and throw some beers.
Yeah, and like giving people options and seeing that there's a lower option. And yeah, like yeah. There's some kind of psychology going there. I can't remember the term for it.
And of course, the lower option, the lowest option is always your what you need to make and break, right?
Right.
So that's your lowest. Anything after that is all gravy.
It's essentially menu engineering, but your menu is experiences.
Right. Yep. And you know, the layout. Who knows where you're going to be, right? So am I going to be in a 200-year-old barn that has like one outlet that I have to share with the DJ and the photographer?
Did you travel with your own generator?
Yeah, right? So I never did. That was off my rider. I was like, nope, here's what you get. It is a great business. I still love it. It still exists. My girl, Nicole, took it over. So.
Did you sell it?
In a way, okay. It's a long sale.
Okay,
it's a long sale.
Well, I like that. I mean, I think it's good to, you know, set somebody up in, you know, over time or whatever.
Yeah, and again, an example. She wanted it. She wanted to take it over.
So what was going on in 2019 where you're like, I'm done with this? Or were you not done with it in 2019?
I wasn't really done. I wasn't done with that. I didn't know that I would have to be done with it, because in my brain I was like, I can do all of this.
It's actually totally before fine. We dive into that, I just realized we got to take a break to thank our sponsor, yeah. And we'll come right back to unpack just kind of the transition from you. What was it called again? The Mixology?
In the mix.
To what is your LLC today?
This is Industry LLC, and the other one is Stashbox LLC.
Got it. We'll transition to present day. We'll be right back. Picture this. It's the end of the month and you're working your way through a shoebox full of invoices and manually entering costs into a janky spreadsheet that is being held together by bubblegum and prayers. And after hours of eye-stabbing tedium, you realize that your numbers don't even match. Oh my God. We've all been there.
But it doesn't have to be this hard. Margin Edge can free you from spreadsheet hell. That's because Margin Edge is a complete restaurant management software that automates invoice processing and shows you your food costs and labor in real time. Just snap a picture of your invoice and Margin Edge takes it from there. Margin Edge will process your invoices automatically with line item detail and combine that information with sales from your POS to give you real time reporting, including a daily P&L, up-to-date plate costs, and updated inventory count sheets. Stop spending hours to get numbers you're not 100% confident in when you could spend minutes and have accurate, real-time food and labor costs. Visit marginedge.com/unstoppable to learn more and to get a free monthly restaurant sales report packed with exclusive industry trends, data, and insight. This episode made possible by Owner.com. Owner.com is the quickest and easiest way for your customers to order directly from you without the expensive 30% commission fees. Ugh. With Owner.com, you'll save thousands every month when customers order through your website and branded app instead of third-party delivery apps, and reward your customers with a built-in loyalty program that turns them into regulars who order again and again. Owner.com also helps you rank higher on Google with world-class search engine optimization built specifically for restaurants with an AI-powered website. We cannot forget Lists. Build a huge list of people who live near your restaurant fast and market to that list on autopilot with text and email sent at the perfect time to help you grow sales and stay top of mind. Owner.com gives you everything you need to grow and market your restaurant online with no contracts or hidden fees. Visit Owner.com/unstoppable right now to book your free demo and see why thousands of restaurant owners trust Owner.com to power their restaurants online. This episode is brought to you by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, used cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to those messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. RTI's services are not limited to oil. They also provide insurance premiums and automated hood cleaning solutions plus hood filtration systems, making your hood cleaning process easy, automatic, and worry-free. In addition to all this, Restaurant Technologies, Inc. can help you reduce your carbon footprint, which we all know is becoming increasingly more important to the consumer. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way. This podcast is made possible by Restaurant Systems Pro, and we need to let you know that every second and fourth Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, Fred Langley, will be going live where he'll cover what you need to know about running a profitable restaurant from soup to nuts. This live event will reveal the steps to manage the service and financial goals for your restaurant's productivity. Everyone who attends this live event will get a recording of the Restaurant Systems Pro 4-day How to Run a Profitable Restaurant from Soup to Nuts recording. This event costs $2,500 to attend live, and you'll get it for free. Head to go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. That's go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. We're back, and in your story, what were we last talking about? You were making the transition. The year's 2019, 3 years in the bag with your own travel mixology catering company.
Yep.
What was your mental state? Like, what was the vision at this point? What's going on inside the head of Dan Haggerty?
It was kind of 2019. So, my partner, Jeremy, and I were actually working at a restaurant right around the corner from here called the Birch on Elm. And we were kind of just getting to that point where, you know, we've been doing this forever, and it was like, I feel like there's like three things that you do at some point in the restaurant industry.
You're 35 years old at this point.
Yep. So you either leave and you go, I'm done. I'm going to do real estate now.
Right.
You stay and you're completely cool with your shifts and doing your thing, or you take that next step, right? Where it's okay, I'm all in. I know the you know, this business is volatile, but I feel like I know it well enough that I can take everything I've learned and my ideas and make my own thing. And we decided to do that part. So yeah, we gave a 6-month notice over there, and we said, hey, we're gonna open our own bar.
Why 6 months?
Just because we had been there for a long time, and it was a small place, kind of like this. So
were you working at Birch the entire time you had your mixology company?
Yep, I worked at like 3 different restaurants. Wow. While I was doing that.
Wow.
Because of the fact that I still, you know, even during the week, if I was, you know, we were still bringing in a good revenue, but there'd be like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday where I wasn't doing anything.
Yeah. Also networking with other bartenders to pull, sure, like during, hey, you're off, you want to pick up a shift for me?
Yep.
Like, it's probably one of your biggest challenges. Was,
everyone that worked for me at In the Mix, yeah, worked at other restaurants, because it was, you know, you only have to show up for 4 hours, dude, and you're going to make like $500. Yeah. Bucks.
Let's I go. Think that's the biggest thing, is having a network of people to bring with you into like, it's, that's one of the biggest challenges. If you go to a city and you don't know anybody and you're trying to open a restaurant, whereas if you work the past 15 years of your life in the industry and you've gotten around and you've started your own, side hustles,
yes,
everyone knows everyone. Like, am I making shit up right now?
No, that's absolutely how it is.
Yeah.
I mean, especially around here, you can go into any restaurant and be like, I know that guy. I think I worked with that guy like 10 years ago. Right. It's such a good networking. Right.
And it's a community.
Yeah.
I mean, like, give 6 months, like what, like now, like you get to help replace the you get to bring up the people that are going to be replacing you. And as a business owner, I mean, the amount of respect that you're getting from the community, you're only going right down the street. Like, you know, like continue that train of thought.
Yeah. So, you if you do a good job, you build up that kind of reputation, and then people want to work with you. You know, you'll go into places and be like, man, I wish that I worked with that girl. She is running this whole place by herself. Like, man, one day I hope that we get to work together, or, you know, anything like that. And your customer base, they realize that too. They go, hey, everyone that works here is awesome. They're all different, but they're all awesome. So, like, no matter what day I come in, so-and-so is going to be here. And that's a great feeling, because it means that what you think is going on in your head, sometimes it's not always the case, but it's actually coming to life, which is, I think that we're doing a good enough job here where that, again, everyone that wants to be here is here. And they do a great job because they want to, you know?
Right.
And, that's really cool. And yes, being in a general area, I would be scared shitless if I was like, I have to move to Baltimore and open a restaurant. Like, I know like 3 people in Baltimore.
Right.
So that would be very scary.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder sometimes people, I mean, unless you're like a Death & Co. and you just have like this cult following, literally, because you publish books that are like best, like that win awards and shit like that. Like, people get tattoos, Death & Co. Like, unless you have a brand like that, you can go anywhere in the country and like people be like, I want to go work for this organization.
Yeah.
But you need that foundation. So I'm one thing I'm curious about, when you and Jeremy's, like, when did the first conversation of partnering start?
Probably like, I think we had been talking about it on and off. So Jeremy and I have known each other for over 20 years, and we've worked at places together, and we've worked down the street from each other, and we complement each other, I think, really well.
How?
So I'm definitely like the hard ass, if you will. Like, I'm like, we got to do this. It's got to be like this. Blah, blah, blah. Jeremy is like a drink wizard, and he's like, no, we'll just... we'll see if it works. We'll do it like this.
So safe to say your manager is the quality and he has the technician quality?
I think we both have different managerial styles.
Okay.
Where mine is like, this is how we're doing it, so make it work, you know? And then if it doesn't work, I go, I was wrong.
not I manager in like the literal sense of like a restaurant manager, but more like you're like a project manager.
Yeah. So I do a like I do a lot of like the, I do like the financials. I do, you know, the decor. Like I have like a way I like it to be done, and then I'll write it out and I'll say, is everyone cool with this? And then I'll get after it, you know? Yeah. And Jeremy is so good with literally just chatting with people, you know, because we kind of a lot of times, you know, I love talking about restaurants and all that stuff. But people will come in and, you know, 20 people will ask you the same like two questions every night. And he's really good at diverting and going, hey, let me tell you about literally anything else, you know, and that's awesome because it brings out those people's personality as well. And they're not just asking you, hey, how's the restaurant going? Like, you're good. That's all you need to say sometimes. It's pretty good. Anyway, how's what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, we kind of like balance that. He's also really good at talking to reps, and I don't like doing that at all. So I just go, how much does it cost? Nope, I don't want it. Yep, nope, don't want that. And he'll, you know, he'll entertain them, and I don't like to do that part. So
so you guys been friends for a while. Like, when did the dreaming, like, who was the first person to say, like, we should do our own thing?
Yeah, we had said that a bunch, you know. We'd go out after work, have some drinks. We got to start our own place, man. We should really do it. We could do it. And then just from that, you know, and then
what did the conversations look like? What were you just discussing?
We would just be talking about, you know, unless you own the place, you can't always do what you want, right? And now being an owner, I realize why that is. But it'd be like, man, you know, we really should do this like this. Or I think this would sell tenfold over this. But if the powers that be don't want that to happen or for whatever reason, you just got to eat shit and keep going. So it was kind of that conversation kept happening more and more.
Yeah, it's interesting because I love these types of stories where like two people who work together who recognize and value, like this is literally happening with Jared and I at Restaurant Unstoppable. Yep. Jared and I used to work at a pizza place together. I admired the shit out of his work ethic and his attention to detail and his ability to maintain consistency and to show up. Like, I was like, this guy's
it's
got
huge.
It. Yeah.
That's huge.
And I think what ends up happening if you have the same vision, the same passions, the same, you start hanging out and like you just gravitate towards each other and then you go for drinks after work.
And
what you guys were literally doing is the visioning process.
Yeah.
And when you don't think of it that way, you're literally just dreaming, right? But that's what the visioning process is.
Oh yeah.
It's like, what are we going to do? What's the, like what's going to be different about it? How are we going to make it better? Like, what are people going to say about us? Like, what are all these things like are the unofficial part of creating a vision. Yeah.
The
dream, right?
The unspoken yet spoken kind of conversation. Because Jeremy and I work together. We're like ham and eggs. Like, we just work well off each other. We're like an annoying kind of shitty comedy duo. Like, but people like that. And it's like, yeah, Jeremy comes up with amazing drink recipes. But even if he didn't, even if he was just doing Captain and Cokes, like our, you know, the way we work together, that is what we were kind of basing it off of. Luckily, we did have all this other knowledge, so we put that into the mix as well. But if you're having a partner, if you're going to have a partner in a business, you got to be like damn sure that you can work with that person, you know? And that was kind of our selling point to ourselves, which is, dude, I just want to make sure we have a job forever. So if we open our own place and if we're the only two people that ever work at it, we can come in and open a couple hours a day, we'll always have a job.
Right.
And that's kind of how it started. And then it's, hey, I wrote down a couple things. What do you think about this? That would be cool if we did this. You know, if we had our own place, we could do that. And if it doesn't work, we're still responsible for it, so we could scrap it and try something else.
Right. Like, let's shelf this idea for later.
Yeah. Yeah. We can morph this. We can you know, we can, we have the power to, no one's going to tell us no.
So how long did the, before the 6 month notice, did you start putting things into action?
It was probably like a year.
Okay.
Where officially we were like writing stuff down.
A year before the 6 months, or a year before opening?
A year before the 6 month notice.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. That was when we started kind of being like, hey, I really would like to do this, you know, and I had like seven notes. I write everything down. I don't really do a lot on the computer. And I had all these notebooks just writing everything down, and names and drinks and how I wanted it set up and theme. Is there going to be a theme? Is the theme that it's just a cool place to hang out? Like, who knows?
Well, you're going with Industry East. Why Industry East? What's the idea?
So it was originally just going to be called Industry, and, you know, just to kind of, because we figured who we would be catering to mostly would be, you know, bartenders, waiters, hairdressers, nurses, tattoo, you know, people in service.
Are you open
service
on Mondays?
We are open on Mondays. We weren't at first, but we are now. We just didn't have enough people to be open on Mondays when we first opened.
Yeah.
But, just any type of service industry, not specifically hospitality, but any industry where you're dealing with people all day long and you're providing a service, but you yourself are the selling point, essentially. This is the place. We made this place so that this is where you would come after and what be like,
in New York, employees only? Was that inspiration for you?
Definitely I had never been there. Jeremy's been there. And I think the concept of it was really cool, but we didn't want it to be exclusively that. You know what I mean? Like, we're in a neighborhood, so we want to be like the neighborhood bar, kind of the everyman, the bar for the everyman, but you get really good, you know, you get good quality
bartender's
stuff.
Bartender.
Yes. Yeah. Like a bar where you can just come hang out. That's, like I said, kind of like
elevated.
like a Cheers,
yeah.
But you're getting like that really good drink, you know, and you're getting top tier service, but you can still say fuck and, you know, have a nice time and be yourself. You know, you don't have to be all snooty. So you're getting snooty quality stuff, but in the most relaxed atmosphere you could possibly get.
Yeah, I love that. So what were the biggest challenges for you in that first year before even saying anything to your current employer?
I think the biggest challenge was to stop overthinking. Because, you know, once you start getting in that mode of, I think I'd like to do this myself. Every day, every hour, you go back and forth and you go, wait, is it going to wicked suck though? Like, what if we have a really bad month and we can't go anywhere else, you know? And then you go, wait a minute, these ideas are fantastic. There's no possible way we could ever fail. So you go back and forth through that and you overthink, which definitely is stressful. And I think if anything, it would just be like, stay a little bit more focused.
How'd that make you feel, this point of just like analysis or paralysis by analysis?
I think eventually you have to convince yourself to just shut up in your brain and go, now we're doing this. We're doing this now. Don't think about what's going to happen. Don't think about the bad things. Only think about what we have to do just even to get this place open.
So when was the tipping point for you? Where all this 1 year strategy, dreaming, talking became action?
I don't know. It's hard to put a finger on it. I think the more we talked about it and the more we kept thinking about it and coming up with concepts, eventually it just went, okay, there's no turning back. I can't even come into work at this place anymore because all I'm thinking about is my own place.
I'm here.
Yeah.
How did we start today's conversation? If you don't want to be here.
Yeah, if you don't want to be here, don't come in.
Right. And if you when it gets to the point where you can't be present for the person who's paying you and taking care of your liabilities, then it's time to stop wasting their time.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, and once we hit that, you know, a little mark on the graph, that's when we gave 6 months. Because I was like, we've been there. It was not a big staff over there. I was, man, if Jeremy was the bar manager. I was like, they lose Jeremy and myself. First of all, that's like a fourth of the staff.
Right.
And we're there all the time.
Yeah.
So that's a huge loss. And so we left with no ill will. Like, it was just, hey, we are going to do this. So we're giving you 6 months.
Right.
To,
and it's not like you're leaving and going to another city. Like, you're moving down the street.
Yeah, literally right around the
corner. That ecosystem, of that community.
Possibly a dick move, but I don't know. It's a great spot.
I mean, I think that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
I mean, really, at the end of the day, you're here to develop people and create opportunity for people.
Absolutely.
And I don't know the folks over at the Birch. I'm not trying to talk shit, but if you don't give the opportunity to people, they're going to go find it someplace else.
And I mean, honestly, it's, dude, the more restaurants and bars, the better. Like, that's better for everyone.
Right.
You know, more, it just brings more people out. It brings more people downtown. I know myself as, you know, the owner, and a leader, if one of my people was like, hey man, I'm gonna open my own thing, like, do it. Like, do it.
Yeah, dude. So take me to the new beginning. Like, what was, like, so you're working out your 6 months. Any advice on how to transition out before we move on to actually getting to your first place?
Like, transition out of the other
how
restaurant?
Do you set your predecessor up for success and things like this?
You really just, you kind of give them everything, kind of teach them everything that you do just as a routine. And again, I will say it a million times. Knowing what not to do is almost more valuable than knowing what to do. Because what you should do changes constantly. But what not to do rarely ever changes.
Is what not to do relative to the specific location we're talking about, these things, or these general lessons?
I mean, it's kind of, some of it's common sense, and some of it's just, yo, don't ever do that. You know, if someone's new or has never worked in a restaurant before and they do something where you're like, okay, hey man, come here, that's an absolute no-no anywhere ever. Like, do not do that. Don't pick up a plate and lick your finger in front of the guests, right? But we laugh, but dude, that,
do you know how many times
happens?
I see people wipe down seats and then turn around and use that towel to wipe off the table. I'm just like, oh, it happens all the time.
And again, and it's those little things. And, like, you know, if no one's ever told you not to do that, you're gonna keep doing
it. I'm guilty of this next one. I used to love keeping my towel in my back pocket.
Yep.
Can't do that. Where do you fall on that one?
I keep a towel in my back pocket, but I'm rarely, like, on the floor. And it's mainly if I'm going to, like, shake someone's hand, and if I have somebody and I go pop.
Right.
And that's it.
I mean, it's so convenient.
It's nice. I like it. I have, you know what I mean? I have like 130 like bar towels at my house, because they're always in my back pocket. And then I get home and I go, oh,
whoops.
Stole a towel again.
So, okay, let's get to actually, like, opening, going through, like you found the location. What was it about this space that appealed to you?
It's funny. Jeremy actually lived upstairs here. This is all residential. It's commercial first floor, all residential upstairs. And we had talked, you know, we had looked at a ton of spots. We wanted it to be small. That was the goal. We wanted it to be small enough that we could work it. If everyone else called out forever, we could still work at it. And that was the feel we were looking for. And the place that was here before is called Suddenly Soupies, little, like, soup sandwich lunch spot. It was here one day, and then at night, Jeremy was coming home from work, and there was a for lease sign in the window.
Oh, man.
And he sent me a picture. He goes, dude, that spot on the corner's for lease. I go, call the guy immediately in the morning. Call that number. Called it, looked at it, I think the next day or the day after, and it looked like shit in here. It was so ugly and gross, but it was what we wanted.
What was what you wanted?
The size, the location. So we're on Hanover Street here, which is, like, a great,
less than a block from the main drag.
Yeah, you're off of the main drag, but you're very close to it, and it's the most well-lit street in downtown Manch, and you're just kind of, like, you're still in the thick of things without being, like, on the main road,
right?
Which is really awesome.
What about the? Are you willing to talk about numbers?
Sure.
What about rent?
At the time, so it's like a, you know, it escalates. I think it goes up $49 every year.
Okay.
And because it's a, I mean, it's a small spot. It's 805 square feet. So our rent when we first signed it was really cheap. I think we were paying $10.30 month. Yeah, it was less than my apartment.
Wow.
And right now I think we're up, I think we're at $12.20 right now.
But still, with all the amount of inflation post-pandemic.
Yep.
So
my electric bill, way more.
So what were your biggest challenges getting it from a piece of trash soup spot to your dream first restaurant?
Ooh, how long does this podcast go for? biggest challenges, let's see if I can categorize it. One, because it is so small, it was how are we going to get everything that we need to be functional in this space? And we did 20 different layouts. We did this and that. Turns out this, the way it's set up now, is the only way it could have worked. So that's how we had to do it.
Like regulation-wise?
Regulation-wise, just maximum seating capacity-wise and efficiency for putting out drinks and food quickly.
How many seats?
There's 20 actual chairs inside, and our capacity inside is 25. That's not including employees. And then in the spring and summer, when we can have outside tables, we have 18 outside. So basically doubles the size of the restaurant, which is where we do from May to October, we do 2/3 of our revenue.
Wow.
Because we've literally doubled. So yeah.
Is there a challenge with, are you limited with throughput? Do you, like, you wanted a small space, but hindsight being 2020, do you think you should have gone a little bit bigger for the amount of the volume?
Sometimes, but very, very rarely. When we have the outside tables, that's our max. Like, we're just maxed out. We can't even.
You got 50 total seats.
Yeah. We just can't do any more than that. And it's actually without awesome.
Providing good service.
Yeah. Yep. Providing good service, providing quality food, quick quality drinks. We just can't do it. And so I think it's perfect the way it is. If you haven't worked in it and you look at it and you go, how the hell do you serve 50 people out of a kitchen that's, the kitchen's 203 square feet, wow, smaller than a food truck.
Wow.
But it's efficient.
But how do you do it?
We is kept it, the menu.
For the chef?
Yeah, no, well, we keep the menu, you know, we don't have a hood vent, so everything in the kitchen is electric, which initially seemed like it would hinder the menu, but actually it made us really think outside the box a lot. And what can we do with this? What, you know, hey, if we're not going to be able to have a fryer later or have an open flame, we have nothing fried, no open flame. So it's like, you're, as a chef, you know, from Jeff's perspective, I know that he felt kind of boxed in at first, but then we started going, well, dude, now we can do whatever, like things that people just generate towards when they have a full kitchen. Well, we got to do this. We got to do fries. You know, like, we can't do that. So we have to do other things.
Right.
So
I'm thinking of, just recently saw like an Instagram reel from Sean Walsh's podcast, Restaurant Influencers. And he was interviewing this, I think she got inspired by like, maybe it was like Indian street food or like Pakistani street food or something like that. Mm-hmm. And she's like, there is no excuse. Like, you look at what these people do on the streets,
the
opportunity is boundless. Just think outside the box and get creative.
Yeah.
And it forces you to do things that other people aren't doing because they take their privilege of having a hood for granted and just do what everyone expects.
Yep. Yeah. And that couldn't be more true, for real. Like, as long as the regulations allow you to do something, like, I mean, you obviously got to follow the...
You guys do flatbreads here, huh?
We do, yeah.
So that's an electric oven you're cooking the flatbreads?
Yeah.
On? Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. We make our popovers every day in that oven. We do the hot dogs in the oven.
Nice.
You know, so, like, everything... That oven does It does everything.
Right.
And then we have a couple induction burners and one panini flat grill.
Yeah. I don't want to downplay your food, but would you say you're a cocktail forward concept?
Yes. This place is a cocktail factory.
Okay.
For sure.
Nice.
But the main goal was always to have, you know, the cocktails are the forefront, but the food has to match. You know, you can't have the, you know, amazing cocktail and then have shit food.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's just not a, wouldn't work for us.
In those early days of just getting started, anything we haven't discussed that is just a lesson that you would love to pay forward?
Yeah, I would say, once you learn everything you can, absorb this, if this is something, I mean, it doesn't even have to apply to just restaurants, but any business, like, pay attention, because you can take any of those lessons and apply them to pretty much anything else, you know, unless it's a specific way of doing something for that business. But pay attention, learn, again, learn what to do, learn what to stay away from, and surround yourself with people who are like-minded in the sense of work.
Right.
Like, if someone's not showing up, like, you're going to stay away from that person, you know? Because it's bad. It's bad. Bad juju.
How do you attract on these people?
I don't know. I think I know personally, I'm more of a lead by doing. You know, yelling only gets you so far, or even just any conversation.
Yeah.
You could. It's a restaurant. You got to tell everyone every day, "Hey, make sure to clean that. Hey, make sure to clean that. Hey, make sure to clean that." You know, that's just a thing that you have to do. But if they see you cleaning it, they go, oh, shit, I got to clean that. Or I should just clean that because then it will be clean. Like, it's pretty simple. Like, man, if it's just dirty and I have to come in tomorrow and I have to clean it anyway, like, you know, just a small example. But
it's that constant gentle pressure at Danny Meyer's shop.
Yeah. I mean, you always, no matter what business, you gotta reiterate, especially the little things.
It will never stop.
You will drive yourself crazy
wanting it to stop. So just accept it.
Yeah, you just got to accept it.
Yeah.
And point it out.
Right.
You go, you know, I'm going to tell you this tomorrow too, right? All right, cool. Well, I'll be here.
Well,
same time, same place.
Back it up with checklists. And I think this is one thing where checklists come in. Like, did you do your checklist?
Yeah.
Okay. Then why isn't it done?
Yeah. Like, it says here it got done, but I don't see that at all.
Yeah.
And everyone's interpretation of what that task might be is always a little different.
And I think people forget too. Like, you don't have to be the checklist checker. Create a checklist for the checklist checker.
Yeah.
And that, like, peer review. And, you know.
That's the goal, right?
Right.
Is to, like, no one wants a manager, you know, standing there with the clipboard over there. But if your entire staff is on a similar page,
they'll
go, hey, man, can you please fucking do that thing?
Right. Everybody knows.
We all already did our stuff.
Right.
Like, can you do it?
Everybody knows what the job done right looks like,
right.
And you're just backing each other up. That's
exactly.
All it is.
Yeah, and I need that too.
Yeah.
You know, I'll have, you know, my manager here will be like, hey, man, did you go to Home Depot and get that thing you said you were going to get 2 days ago? And I go, nope, but it's on the list.
So, I mean, I think at one point, and I'll put you on the spot here, when I was a little tipsy, I came out to Industry East with my buddy, Chris Earl Hanley, who I've been trying to recruit for Restaurant Unstoppable because he is like
great
a,
dude.
He is a tech like wizard, that guy. And like, I struggle with the tech. It's my goal to recruit him to be like my, like, oh, what's the money? Who's the dude that works for double? He would be pissed off because he wants to be 007, but I want to be 007. But who's a guy who like is like the tech? Is it money? Not money, penny. Is it Q?
Is it Q? That sounds right.
I don't know. But like, he's so good with technology, and like, I just want to like sit him off on restaurant technology, but like, figure this out. Anyway, he was with us. We're celebrating the fact that I got approved for my loan to buy
That's
the
right.
RV, and we're here. So I was a little tipsy, and I asked you what your percent profit was. Do you remember what you told me? I don't want to put you on the spot. If what you told, like, I'll let you.
It was probably at what, like 20?
I think you said at 1.35%.
It was the first year.
That's crazy. It's like gangbusters.
It was crazy. And There is a whirlwind of reasons why that happened.
Why?
It's certainly not that now.
Well, I would imagine it was your cost, your you know, so your prime costs were probably down.
Our labor costs were nothing.
It was you and Jeremy.
Labor costs was nothing, just Jeff. Jeff's on salary, so.
Your labor cost was your owner's pay.
Pretty much, and we didn't pay ourselves for, we only made tips, because we were the bar. We were out front, and Jeff was in the back. Yeah, so we had very, very low overhead, extremely low overhead. Also, at the time that we ended up opening, we opened during the pandemic. And to the tail end of this, when they started letting restaurants open again.
So 2021?
Yep. And we were scared shitless, first of all, because we were like, are there even going to be restaurants anymore? What did we do? Did we buy a already
scratched?
Can you
imagine a world without restaurants? Dude, and that was a legitimate part of the conversation.
I know,
we were so
crazy, dude. Literally sick to my stomach, like, daily. Because I was like, well, that's all our money. I have no more money. We have to open. If we sell one Sprite, I'll be cool. But because of the timing, you know, seemingly it went from the absolute bottom of the barrel, worst feeling you could, thoughts you could have every day about opening a restaurant, to when we opened, you know, a lot of restaurants were either still closed, had super reduced hours, or like a tiny menu, they'd reduce their menu. We opened, we hadn't worked. We hadn't worked in 11 months, like actually worked a shift. We had just been building the place. So when we opened, we were open 5 days a week. We were open till 1 a.m. We served food late, and it just immediately, we were the only place doing that because there was only us.
Yeah.
And people were like,
you have to be open late if you call yourself industry and you're the place where people come after they get off
work. Yeah, food late, drinks late. And I, just that alone, and again, you know, having been in the area, I was like, yo, if just our friends come in, I think we'll be all right. And it was rapid.
People, so you didn't, like, you didn't like promote, you didn't announce anything. You just opened the doors and let people.
Yeah, we still.
Why
don't.
That approach?
I don't know. We were out of money. I didn't have any money left.
Well, I think there's something to be said too about doing this massive grand opening, right? And then you let people in, and you're like, oh shit! Like the way we thought it was going to go isn't how it goes. But if you just kind of slowly turn up the nozzle and like you just open the doors and let people trickle in, you don't have a lot of second chances to win people. Like,
yeah, that wasn't. I don't think that was initially the thought, but it quickly became, you know, wow, this is what happened, right? Because we opened in the craziest time of all time for restaurants, like we're like, what? We can't just be like, hey, come to our new restaurant, right? Because people weren't even really coming out still then. It was other restaurant people and nurses and anyone that was going to work every day, you know? So it became that spot for a lot of people. A lot of people in the neighborhood, there's a lot of apartments around here. They'd be like, oh my God, there's a place open that's not closing at, you know, 8 p.m. Sick. Like, let's go hang out at it.
Right.
And then it just kind of grew. And, you know, a lot of help from guests, you know, just posting on Instagram and TikTok and all that.
Well, I think the flair bartending. I mean, not necessarily flair in the sense of like spinning stuff, but like the visual appeal of the cocktails that you're making. That is marketing in itself.
Yeah, and that's always just been our thing. Was we just wanted to do,
and it's fun too.
Wicked,
the
awesome
names,
cocktails. Yeah,
and it's slightly inappropriate sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's again like,
which is probably why
we've tried to stay very true to our initial pre-2019 conversations, where it's we wanted a bar that we would want to work at and go to after work.
Right.
And if you change it too much, it's not authentic anymore. So our authentic selves are, you know, snarky.
Well, you also are
fun.
Your target market.
Yeah.
So like, so they say, don't like you build something for the people. You don't build something for you unless you are your target market. And
exactly.
In every city, there is an industry target market. Of people, your peers that recognize good work and want to be a part of that, and like they appreciate it.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, it is for the people, but you're doing it. You know, you're doing it for your, like a musician would put out a record, you right. know, they're like, well, I'm not making this record for my fans. I'm making this record because this is the music I want to make.
Right.
Right. And that's like here, like,
who's that dude? There's a dude out there who's like preaching right now. I think he's got a new book coming out where he's like about creativity. He's like, make it for you. Like, everything. He's like, he's like, I'm completely selfish about, like, I make everything that I create from. He's like the long hair.
Is it Rick Rubin?
Beard. Yeah. 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 Like, yeah. Super hippie.
Yeah, dude. Man. His vision of music and art is very similar to how we do the restaurant.
Right.
Which is like, hey, I think this is a good idea. If I think it looks cool, hopefully other people think it looks cool.
Right.
But I'm never going to put up something in here because someone else said, hey, you should get this thing. I was like, eh.
There's just constantly contradicting advice in this industry. It's like, you know, you got to like find out what's missing in the market and reverse engineer and create. Like, yeah, that is an approach.
Yep.
Also,
you could do that.
Being a badass who just creates really cool shit and is so passionate and so unique and is creating things that you want. Like, there's something to be, like, there's, I've seen that time and time again where that works.
Yeah.
So, like, which one is it?
So, for me and for industry and Stashbox, and if you ever run into anyone that works for or with us, they will be, they're probably annoyed by it. But, like, I always say it's service over everything. It's like 101% scale. So, the food has to be awesome, the drinks have to be awesome, the atmosphere has to be awesome. But service has to be above all of that. Just a little bit. Service always has to be number one. Because yeah. you could have, you know, you can have the best food, the best drinks, wherever, in a really pretty spot. But if your service isn't good, eventually people aren't going to come back.
Right.
But if your service is good and you're 99% of the time you're consistent and then one day you fuck something up, people are going to be a little bit more forgiving
right.
because they've been treated well and had a nice experience. Even if that one thing gets fucked up, then if you're a shitty service and then you fuck something up, no, they're not coming back.
Be more specific. What does number one service look like?
Everyone working, everyone doing their best that they can that day. Everyone working as a team, saying. Manners are a huge thing. Someone walks in the door, hey guys, how you doing? Someone's leaving, hey guys, thank you so much. Same thank you.
How just, do you, so these things are rituals, right? This is
oh, yeah.
this is like, how do you bake rituals into, how do you make sure that's being done every day?
Emphasis.
How do you make sure people show up and they want to give their best every day?
It's just that, just reemphasize, like I said, you basically, the restaurant is doing the same like four things every day, pretty much, right? So it's you just gotta emphasize it, and then.
What do you mean by emphasize?
Hey, greet those people.
So
don't miss anyone. Give everyone the same treatment, you know. Initially, because obviously, if this table here is having a great time, and that table over there is a little bit more subdued. You know, you're going to be rowdy with these guys and joking around. And then over here, you can't just be like, yo, what's up?
Yeah.
When they clearly don't want to be spoken to as such. So you got to read the room and just give the best service. Basically, like I said, people that we try to hire, it's a more of a personality thing. The skills come.
Right.
The skills come along.
I mean, I think there's things you can do. So I'm thinking of Mendocino Farms right now. Mario DePero.
Yeah.
Had him on the show, a wizard when it comes to culture. And he was talking about the things that they do to emphasize these things. You can have triggering moments that resurface your values. So for them, their triggering moment to acknowledge their guest is the first guest that walks through the door every day. They all cheer something. I can't remember what
That's
it is.
That's kind of awesome.
But they just say, they all like say something, like, and everybody has to say it.
Yeah.
But it's that resurfacing that we see this person. They are the first person here, and we are collectively acknowledging them, and it's a celebration of the day has started.
Yeah, yeah, then, that's pretty cool.
And like they do it for the last person who leaves. So like this is something that is just a ritual.
Yeah.
That and you look at every culture across the nation or across the world. I mean, like all these different cultures, they have rituals.
Yep.
That are unique to their culture. That echo and reinforce who they are and what yeah. their values.
And it brings
are.
People together.
Right. And every restaurant is a microcosm of that. And you have to recognize and value your values by creating rituals to resurface your values.
Yeah. Yeah. We could actually, now that you've brought that up, it made me think of, so here at industry specifically, when someone comes in the door, a lot of times we'll race to see who can bring them menus first, you know? And it's just like a thing that we do. It just started one day and it's kind of funny. And it looks silly, you know, and we laugh about it, and then the people laugh about it, and it just makes them immediately feel comfortable as soon as they walk in the door.
Right.
Makes them feel comfortable because it's kind of goofy, but it also makes them feel like, wow, there's two people coming at me with menus. They want me to be in here, you know what I mean? And they're having a nice time,
yeah.
You know? And
it's a joke, and it's fun.
It's a joke, know? Yeah. It's like,
and it's serious.
But also, like, I want you to have the menu as soon as you come in the door.
It's a sincere.
Yeah, you like when you walk in and, you know, no one looks at you, that's weird, right?
Right.
So to get that attention and be like, oh, they want me to be in here. Like, yeah. I'm glad I came in here. This is going to be fun.
That's exactly how I feel every time I come here.
Yeah.
And
that's good to hear because that means it's working.
For sure. So you started to allude about your cost of goods and having low cost of goods.
Yeah.
So, like,
that was the case when we first opened.
So low rent, relative.
Yep.
Small staff. You and Jeremy when you started. And I think going from 35 to 25% or 20%, probably, I'm assuming that was the excess operational expenses going towards labor?
Yeah. You know, it's not even really the labor here because we keep that at a pretty... We're pretty consistent on the labor. We have added people, obviously, since we started. So that did go up. But that's a little bit more of a constant that I can keep track of, the labor part anyway. It's just been...
Cost goods.
Man, it's crazy. Just, again, that... I don't keep meaning to bring up COVID and the pandemic, but it really fucked everything for, like, multiple years because, I mean, what, even last... Last year, the beginning, like the middle spring of last year was like, dude, chicken. Chicken would be like $75 one week. And then the next week would be like $135.
Yeah.
And you're like, bro, I can't even keep, like these costs are insane. Our electric, specifically in New England, our electric bill went up 110%.
Wow.
Eversource just went, we're going to charge you this now. And you can't do anything about it because you can't get electricity from anywhere else. So... that went up. So literally our electric bill went from $600 to $1,300.
Wow. That's crazy.
Like in one month. That was crazy. And then, again, just the costs of everything just kind of went up.
Where do you lie in this idea of just paying it forward to the guests? Like, why would you have less profit if it's costing you more to produce that?
It's kind of I'd like to play with the numbers a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm like, man, if we can offer this and this instead of this, like we took duck confit off the menu here. It sold, but it didn't sell that well. And then I was looking at the other stuff that we sell and I was like, you know, the duck's expensive, dude. So like if we, some people are going to be bummed if we take that away, but let's just come up with a different thing. Just a new thing that we've never carried before, we've never made as a dish, and hit them with that. So we used to do duck confit popovers, and we were making the popovers every day anyway. I was like, why don't we just do popover, like a weekly popover? So we just change it. And just having that, you know, doesn't matter
juxtaposition.
The fact that it's going to change every week, you know, yes, everyone loved the duck popovers, but if you change it every week, then there's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
And
something in the market, something to make noise about.
Yeah. They forget about the other ones. And maybe every now and then we'll throw the duck ones back on as a treat, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it's fun for us and it's fun for the guests. They're like, oh, what are they going to make this week?
So what is your menu?
It's kind of...
It's short menu.
Yeah. It's appetizery, nibbly stuff. We have like the starters, which is like charcuterie board. We have a crudité board. We do oysters and
hot dogs.
The hot dogs were actually kind of a joke because they started as a joke because of the size of the kitchen. We were like, man, we we need to add something else to this menu. And what do people want to eat when they're drinking when they get out of work? Like, they want to eat like fancy comfort. Trash food.
Yeah.
So, like, and we could do it. It was like, not everything can be fresh made to order, especially at like 11 at night, you know? So what can we throw in the oven and cook real fast and then sear, you know, butter some buns, throw them on the thing. And also it's a hot dog, dude. It's like a blank canvas.
Yeah.
So you could put anything on a hot dog.
And everything goes good with bread and hot dogs.
Dude, you have 2, 3, 5 drinks, so, you know, you're like, yo, let me crush a couple hot dogs.
Well,
right
I
now.
Think, and I'll go on the record. I think, I don't know. There's no right way, one way to run a restaurant. There's a myriad of possibilities and unique geniuses out there. Like, your unique ability is unique to you and lean in, whether you're like a super creative, fine dining, like savant chef, mm-hmm. and that's what you do and you have unlimited budget, like, and that's how you draw people in. But at the same time, to your point, I think that like your focus, what your talent for you and Jeremy, the owners, is the bar. And like, that's where you put your emphasis is on the cocktails. And at the end of the day, you just need to feed people, and you can do low cost, good food.
Yes.
And make people very happy if you put the focus, number one, like you said, on the service and the relationships and making sure people are happy. I'm not speaking forever, but me personally, it's the people that pull me into a restaurant. Yeah. I don't go back to the same restaurant because of the pretentious food that's being served.
Right.
It's the fucking relationship.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you want to go to a place. If you're coming in to sit down, right, and have a time, you want to feel like you're welcome there, right?
Right.
But going back to the menu a little bit, Jeff has this ability to take, we'll call it like regular ass food, and he just I don't know where it comes from. He's just got this thing where he just like our number one selling item on our menu are short rib tacos. But he makes like the sauce that he makes for it is you could just eat that sauce with a spoon.
Yeah.
The way he braises them, they come out and it's the mixture of what he puts in the jus. We use a little bit of the jus when we recook it, and it just everything that he does, the way he does it, we added crushed up like blue corn tortillas just to give it a little crunch because it's kind of mushy, you know, and just that little extra salt and that little crunch, like just like it's a taco,
yeah,
right? It's whatever, dude. It's a taco, but we sell more of those than anything else because they're consistent and they're really good.
Yeah.
You know, and like that's important no matter what you're doing, whether you're doing crazy, wild, you know, giant white plate with two things on it. That's fine as long as those things are good.
Right.
Right. Or you're doing hot dogs.
Right.
They gotta still be good.
And I would imagine the sheer amount of volume of alcohol you're selling probably helps the project. I mean...
Yeah, we crush tequila and High Life over here. And it just works. And yeah, as far as like the numbers thing goes, you just get to kind of roll with it. As long as you know what your bottom line is, you know, you can adjust and you have to adjust. You have to say, you know what, let's take this off or let's move this here. Or if we can just make it till April when it's going to be nice out, you know, like, let's switch this around. And always be forward thinking about what the next menu is going to look like.
Yeah. We got to talk about Stashbox, man.
Yeah.
So, brand new restaurant, wearing the t-shirt right now, opened 3 or 4 months ago?
We opened, what is it now? It's February? So we opened October 2nd.
October 2nd. So 5 months ago. Take us into when did the conversation of Stashbox start?
I think it was about maybe like a year and a half into industry. Well, our original business plan was always 3 spots. And we were like, well, that's only going to work if the first one works. So let's see how that goes. And because of the rapid, you know, like I said, it was crazy here. So because of that rapid heightened, now we had money again.
Yeah.
We went from literally no money to, hey, we have money to do stuff again. Hi, Amy.
No, you're fine. It happens.
So it was like, hey, this works. Like, what we're doing is working. So maybe it's time to go and see if we still want to do this.
What is, like, what are you saying this works? What did you distill?
Just kind of the method, like what we've been talking about. You know, it's like, all right, yeah, we can sell hot dogs and be busy.
Right.
You know, like the concept of the service, everything has to be consistent and service above everything. And as long as we can do that, and it's making people happy. People like to talk about it. They tell their friends because they feel comfortable here.
Right.
And we can do that again.
You guys are averaging a 4.8 right now on Google review for both Stashbox and Industry East.
And that's a complete testament to the staff.
Yeah.
And
that's hard to do.
It is hard to do.
When you're selling hot dogs, right? Like, which is a testament, again. Yeah. And I'm not saying that their hot dogs aren't delicious.
Right, right.
I'm saying it's proof that you can do low cost things well.
Yes.
Yep. And follow that up with amazing service and make people happy.
Yeah.
Like, you do not need to sell frog wah to make money and do exorbitant food costs and labor costs. But it chews into your profit. And I'm not saying it's all about profit, but there is a level of fiscal responsibility that the industry is guilty of not delivering on.
Yeah, you have to watch. I mean, if you're not watching the numbers, don't open a restaurant. Or if you don't have a person who is interested in the numbers, I wouldn't recommend it.
Right.
But the 4.8 thing, that's everything that we've been talking about that I emphasize all the time. Hey, greet people when they come in the door. Say thank you. Compliment them. Oh my God, that show looks great on you. People just talk to them like they're in your living room. You know what I mean? You're at work, but it's your work.
Right.
Like, they're like in your house. So just treat them like that. And so the concept, like, there's no real concept at Industry. The concept was to make a comfy place where you could get delicious stuff for not super high city prices.
Right.
Right.
So with the Stash Box, kind of do what you did again. Take us through, like, what were their challenges?
Yeah.
Unique to that restaurant.
So it was almost the exact opposite of when we opened here. So here we had, you know, I had everything planned. I had planned everything out for a year and a half. And then costs were still low. Everything changed over there. One, now we had a place that people like, and once they heard we're opening another place, the anticipation as well.
Huh.
Let's see if they can do that again, right? So there's that.
Right.
There's the expectation. When we opened here, no expectations at all. Nothing. People were just like, hey, a place. Let's go to it. Now it's like, okay, well, they did this. Let's watch them fail. No. but there was that, just the social aspect of it. And then there was the cost. Costs were everything. Even when I did the final draft of the business plan for Stashbox, I had done it the previous October. Because we got the keys last January. So we opened this past October. But I had written the business plan beforehand. And even from when I wrote the final business plan to when we got the keys to the location, everything had already gone up. And it kept going up. Materials. Any type of... During COVID, when we opened this place, contractors were beating... Okay, I'll do that work. I'll do that work. Over there, couldn't get anyone to show up. And if they did, again, it was double what it used to be. Equipment didn't come on time. I ordered an oven in February. It came in July.
Hey, you have a hood now, too. That's exciting.
Just the costs were, dude.
What was that space before it was Stashbox?
Oh, man, it's been a bunch of places. But most recently,
was it a restaurant?
Yep. It's always been a restaurant. No, it was the... opposite of turnkey. It actually was gnarlier than this place when we first opened it. So the last restaurant that was in there hadn't been anything in 3 years because they went out of business.
The pandemic didn't help.
Yeah, well, they went out of business in everything shut down.
Manchester's kind of been struggling a little bit too. Am I being offensive when I say that?
I think what is struggling is the drive of people to open new places. But it's changing now. Like, it's changing the...
I think the pandemic was really good for New Hampshire, honestly. I think a lot of money is coming from Boston and the city, getting out of the big city, and...
It's tough to buy a house, but...
Yeah, that's not good. But in terms of business, there's money coming into southern New Hampshire.
It's always there if you want it.
And I'll go on the record and say this too, and I love it. And I don't know if you've noticed, but New Hampshire, for the longest time, was probably one of the least diverse places in the country. Yeah. There is more diversity in New Hampshire now than ever before, which I think is fantastic.
Well, yeah, it's you're close enough to everything where that if you're willing to settle here, it's awesome. You're 45 minutes from Boston. You're 45 minutes from the beach. You're 45 minutes from the lake. You're 45 minutes from the mountain.
Yeah.
Like we are.
So maybe we should stop talking about how great it is.
Don't come here. Stay out.
Unless you're visiting.
Yeah. No, it's, and Manchester specifically, I mean, we're the largest city north of Boston in New England,
right,
in this area, largest city north of Boston until you hit Montreal.
Mm, wow.
So Manchester itself it's growing. It already was big. It's growing now. And the more the better, man.
Yeah.
Diversity. There's so many great places. There's a Caribbean spot down the road from us called Maya's, and they do oxtail, and they do, oh man, so good.
So what you're only 3 months in, or sorry, 5 months in with, so there's not much of a story to be told there in terms of time to has elapsed to this. The story hasn't had time to unfold is what I'm saying. It's happening.
Definitely, you know, we've taken, yeah, we tried to take a lot of things that we did here, and... Oh, what's up, man?
I have a restaurant podcast, bro. I am a part of the restaurant.
That's our produce guy, Cam. So...
That was great. Hello!
See, even he's happy. He knows how to do it. But with Stashbox, we basically were saying...
Pretty sure we got that on camera, too.
Nice. Yes. We were kind of trying to take what we were... take the things that worked from here and do them over there. And we learned quickly what was not going to work there. And we shifted. And we're still shifting.
What did you learn wasn't going to work there?
Kind of the, I don't want to call it lackadaisical approach to things because it's so small here. Like, everyone sees each other every day here.
If you're not here by 4:45, you're not getting a seat.
When it's nice out. Yeah, when it's nice out.
Like whenever I come here, I'm like, we got to get there when they open.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as actually the procedures, here, it's kind of there's seven people that work at industry, right? So everyone kind of knows what to do.
Right.
Over there, way more staff, way more jobs to be doing. And so kind of that, assuming that once I show someone one time how to do something, that they'll do it again.
How are you overcoming that?
Just working on it. Just coming up with, it's kind of a trial and error thing. Okay, this worked here. It's not going to work here. Let's try a different approach. Does that approach work better? Does the result better, but it takes way more time? Okay, how can we? It's just kind of a constant figuring out what works best. And then once you do, that's the way you do it.
Right. And once you figure it out, when that's the way to do it, how does it stay that's the way?
browbeating. Hey, do that this way, please. I know. It's just getting, same thing, getting everyone on board.
Right.
You know, making them, if everyone can see that this works really well, then what? Then don't not do it. Because it works this way, and that's how we do it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything we haven't discussed today in terms of what you think has contributed to your success? And I mean, I like to talk about, like, we talked about how you got here, where you are today. I also want to talk about where you're going, where you think the industry is going, and how we can move into the future a little more intentionally.
Sure. Yeah, I know. Getting here today, literally just have to give a shit. Like, that's the...
That's easy and that hard.
That's the one. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Because some days you don't want to... So I don't want to make Instagram posts. I don't want to answer emails, right? But I do because I still give a shit.
Right.
Right? And that's how any small business or any large business, you know, like, you just have to... Someone has to be there giving the shit. Right. Right? You know? And again, it's a trickle down. If I go in to work... And everyone sees it, I'm like, you know, like not paying attention, or I'm in a grumpy mood, or I'm, you know, just kind of bumming around. They are going to do that too. If I go in there, I'm like, what's up, everybody? Let's go. Ah, you know, like they're probably, he's so cheesy. But
it's going to lift people.
But it's in a, you know, it's okay, cool, let's go. Yeah. You know,
and this is like one of the things, like when I, so when you look at, I don't know, different consultants or experts out there, they usually talk about like people, process, and promotion as being like the three things that, like, that you need to focus on to be successful. Like, you need to have systems, you need to have people systems, like, you need to have the culture, you need to be able to market and promote what you're doing. I'm not arguing, but not enough people, in my opinion, talk about the fourth P, personal growth. Because if you're not there every day getting better and working on yourself and your mental health, and you can never pull people up or push them up higher than you are. Mm-hmm. Your restaurant will only rise to your height.
Absolutely. And no, that's what it is.
And that's what I'm hearing from you. And I think, and I haven't, I'm not as close with Jeremy. I think I've only ever waved and smiled to him. Yep. I would love to, next time I'm in here, get to know Jeremy more.
Yeah, definitely.
But like, in that, but you, I mean, I'll say, like, you're a big reason why I like to come here, because, like, you recognize me, you lift me up when I come here, and I can see that you do it to your team.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and I think that is what everyone should do. Not everyone does do that, but, like, again, you also have to mean it, you know? Like, I would suggest no one gets into the restaurant business if that's not something that you actually want to do.
Right
because you want to give that experience to your guests, right? Because you like it, but you have to do it with everyone, you know?
So I'm thinking, like, you, the truth of the matter is, like, if you like dinner parties, right, and you like to invite your friends over and do these things, you're not going to like everybody that you invite into your restaurant. So you have to, like, turn, like, do you really want to do this? Because you're going to have to love people you might not necessarily love.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always the slightly more difficult folk. But part of the fun, I for me personally, I can't speak for everybody, you know. Some people just put up with shit because they are making money, right?
Right.
For me, I like the fun of it personally, like, I'll fuck with people. Like, if you're going to come in right off the bat and sit down and just be a grumpy old bastard, like, all right, well, you're already in here. So you're either going to leave or you're going to stay. Those are the only two things that are going to happen. So let's have a little fun with it.
Well,
I try to turn people around, or if I know they're just going to give me shit all night, I'll just give it right back to them. You know? And because we're not corporate, we can kind of do that. And again, I think that's why I've had people come in here. You know, their first time they came in, they were skeptical. They're like, oh, I heard it was great, but you don't have this, you don't have that. I'm like, nope. So you feel free. There's 75 other restaurants around here that you could go to.
Right,
but
they
stay, and you have fun with them. You know, that's the fun part, I think.
So what's your vision for the future?
I'd really like to hand it off at some point, because I'm not good at doing that. So
not good at handing it off?
Yeah, I'm here all the time. I like to know what's going on. I like to have my hand in everything, and I know that's not how you. I'll never not do that if I don't consciously try to not do that. Right. So you were saying personal growth. Like, eventually, I cannot be here all the time.
Yeah,
right?
Especially if you want to scale.
Yeah. Like, yes, exactly. So then, that's finding that team that you put together of people who give a shit. And they see the vision, they're on board, and they notice that the more they contribute with their time and their effort, the better everything gets. And then they want to be a part of that too, so it can hand it off. And but more, that's kind of a broad sense, but more importantly, see how Stashbox goes. Open, the plan was always to have three places, and then we'd like to really get, we really want to be able to offer health insurance and benefits. Mm-hmm. And we've been in talks with different entities as far as that goes, because New Hampshire is a at-will work state. So it's kind of, you have, there's no, like, there's no unions or anything like that. So we don't, currently we don't offer health insurance, because we just, that would eat, our payroll's already, payroll's always the biggest, you know, money, you spend the most on that, right? So that, because we're small, we don't have a giant staff, we actually pay more into that. It's like, man, I just can't do that, especially during the winter months, like, when it's, our sales are lower. Like, so we're figuring out how we'd be able to do that and offer it consistently while still.
I wish I knew more about this subject. I struggle in the details with things, especially associated with numbers.
Yeah.
I would love to pose this to our community though. If you're listening to this and you know of a great solution, a way for small businesses to get access to good health insurance and benefits, please join our community, Unstoppable Restaurant Owners and Operators, and share it in there so I can relay that
absolutely
to Dan. excuse me.
I know different states have, you know, sometimes it's a state thing. Sometimes it's, they're just different. Like I said, we've been going down different avenues, and I'm kind of like, my head's in a bunch of different directions with it. But I think, having, you know, eventually getting the third place and then putting it all under a restaurant group, that I know for a fact is a, it will help with that kind of thing, because you have a different leverage with the insurance companies. So yeah, we're working on that, and it would just be really cool. It's just another, you know, it's another reason to come to work,
right?
You know, like, well, I'm not even getting health insurance, why should I show up right today? You know, like, and I get that, because it wasn't that long ago that I was, you know.
Right. And if we do want to transform the industry and we want to give people incentive to be a part of this industry, we need to give them incentive. We need to be a big boy industry, or like girl industry. Big boy, girl, pants on, you know.
Exactly. And I love the fact that it's still that kind of industry where, yes, you know, you're a kind of a stay-at-home mom, but you still want to pick up that one shift, your Saturday shift, right? I love that you can still do that. I'm coming in, working my one shift, getting out of the house, making a little extra money, and then there's the people that are like, I'm here 6 days a week, this is what I do, right? And I love that the industry can still be like that. But I think everyone should, you know, everyone should be able to get something out of that other than your tips, you know, and we're trying
anything,
to do it.
Anything you wish I asked you that I did not ask you, a subject that we should have discussed, you're uniquely in the position to talk about, bring it to the surface. If not, we're going to start to wrap it up.
Okay. I don't know. I feel like I talked for 8 hours, so I'm not sure.
Was it painful?
Hopefully no, not at all. Not at all. I just don't really get to talk that much without like 28 people around.
I've been chomping at the bit to get you guys on the show. I just really enjoy it. You're right here in my backyard. I mean, the reviews online are amazing. The when you told me your numbers, I was like, holy shit. And I feel like you're like the next, like, you're already a big deal in Manchester, but like, I'm excited to watch you continue. You're only 3 years into your business.
Yep.
Like, where are you going? That's exciting.
Yeah, hopefully just going up, man. Like I said, I want to be able to hand this off to whoever wants it, right? I want to be able to come in every other day. I want to be able to do more outside things that involve the industry, but, you know, do more charity stuff, do more events. You know, being in here is awesome. I love it. Like, I made it how I would want my living room to look, but, you know, I want to be able to go do these other things and pass on what we do here to the next person. Maybe eventually have some profit sharing, like I said, the health insurance, and hopefully by the way that we're doing things now, we'll be able to do that within the next couple of years is the goal.
I love
and that. And you said if there's one thing we want that I want to talk about, anyone that's listening, just a big thing that has worked for us, and I say this a lot to a lot of the other business owners around here and also our staff, is that it's not competition, it's commerce. So if you got beef with someone down the street or you're worried about a place opening, like, go over to them like they're your new neighbor, like in your neighborhood. Hey, what's going on? I'm Dan. Anything you need? You know, I know a lot of people do that, and I think more people need to do that. And that's what's going to make all these places, people go, man, that little area of town is great. All the restaurants know each other. They all work together, even though they're separate businesses. It's commerce,
right?
Not competition.
I think that's at the core of what we're trying to do here is to instill those values of, like, we go further together, and, like, this is that on steroids. Like, I'm trying to give people like you with these values a microphone to say these are the values our industry needs to have if we're gonna be a legitimate industry and attract onto ourselves legitimate people.
And not everyone's gonna do it, but the ones who do will see further that it works.
Yeah,
100%. And I think it's gonna be great, and this industry will carry on.
Right. I mean, that is 100% the one of the biggest trends I've seen across the nation. The people at the top are all friends with each other. And I think new people who come in look at those people and they go, wow, there's a click. Have you tried to approach them? Have you introduced yourself?
Yeah.
Like, they're don't assume that they're not willing to, like, support you too.
Most likely, they want to do what we're doing.
Right.
Which is tell you what worked for them.
Right.
And it might not always work for you, but you gotta, if you want it, you gotta interpret it and figure it out.
I call it business polyamory, where like what ends up happening is, like, you have this amazing chef over there who becomes friends with this amazing bartender over there, and they go into business together and they start their own, and they still have equity, but what ends up happening is you just have these people who stay in their lanes, and they have different partners who benefit from their unique ability. And, like, that's how it's supposed to work. Like, your strengths can serve more than one person in one group.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, easier said than done. Like, you have to find balance. You can't screw over some people. Like, if you're gonna be in a polyamory, like, you need communication.
Yeah, you gotta have everyone's gonna know a little bit of something.
You gotta spread the love. Yeah, you know,
it's all about, like I said, you just gotta love it. You just gotta love it more than you hate it.
But it's 51-49. It's that mindset of abundance, right?
Yeah,
for sure. Absolutely. Over scarcity.
Anything's there for the. It's all there for the taking. Just how are you gonna get it?
Right.
You know, and how are you gonna share it?
We just got a couple more questions, man. This has been a lot of fun.
Sir.
So what is one thing about your business, a value, a process, a system that is uncommon and makes you truly unstoppable?
I think our no-frills approach to service, you know. Everyone gets equal treatment, but not the same treatment. Like I was saying before, you know, if one table's rowdy and yucking it up, you gotta yuck it up with them. If one table's having a date and wants to be subdued, you leave them alone, and you do it with your own personality, because people can see fake shit and it's annoying. I know for me, I don't want to talk to the cheesy guy, right? I want to talk.
I was out to dinner last night, and my dinner companion and I were talking about, like, when people approach you and they just crank it up, and it's like, it's just like, are you, like, do you talk, you know, to everybody like that? Like,
you know, that's not real. Just be authentic. Yeah. And, you know, if your authentic self is shitty, like, you gotta come in and do prep in the daytime when there's no one here.
So the next question I have for you is, the mission statement is to change the world by inspiring and empowering and transforming the restaurant industry. So, how have you personally transformed? Who are you today versus the man you were when you started in this industry?
I would say I am much more aware of the struggles that everyone goes through on a daily basis, you know, because you can't just complain, well, what was me, blah, blah, blah. You have to think about, like, when someone comes in here, you listen to their stories. You can see they might not be having a good day, whether it's your employee or a guest or whatever. And so it just kind of makes you, it just makes you more human, I guess. Like, you understand why people want to be in here in the first place, you know, if you actually listen and you actually care. So it's just being more aware of what everyone's going through at any given time. And something that I didn't really think about when I was just working the bar and trying to make money. I was like, yeah, whatever. Oh, you're cute. You know, like now it's, you just kind of know what everyone's going through. Because whatever, you know, someone's business might be struggling here, you know, and that sucks because it's all their money is in that business. It's what they do, you know, they try to help them do that. So, yeah, I think that would be the biggest one for me.
If you got the news that you'd be leaving this world tomorrow, all the memories of you, your work, and your restaurants would be lost with your departure, with the exception of three pieces of wisdom that you could leave behind for the good of humanity and your legacy, what would those three pieces of wisdom be?
Let's see. I would say put your full effort into anything that you do. Even if your full effort sucks, as long as you're putting in what you know to be your full effort, then you can at least die knowing that you did your best.
Yeah, and you're going to get better. Yeah. You're going to gain when you try. You're going to get you're only
absolutely.
Gonna get better. One.
Okay, that's one. What I would say, become an observer.
Two.
Just listen, soak it, be a sponge, you know, like actually pay attention because you can learn more. You can learn more by doing and listening and repeating than you can by a lot of times, you know, reading the instruction manual. So observe, and I'll steal this one from Bill and Ted. Be excellent to each other. There's no reason not to, you know. Yeah. If you're in a pissy mood, go fucking hide in the closet for a little bit and then come back out when you want to have a nice time. So be excellent to each other.
And man, I've really loved today's conversation.
Same, man.
And before we wrap it up, I really want this next question to be the North Star. I want to remove myself from the decision-making process of who do I make an example of. If you found out this person was a guest on Restaurant Unstoppable, like, who do you just admire and you wish you could learn from, you think they're doing it right, who is that person for you?
That's a lot of people.
You can mention more than one.
Ooh, okay. I would say, first off, my friend Matt Berry, who is also from New Hampshire. He does like pop-ups. He's got like a fancy pop-up called Dahlia, and then he's also got a crazy pizza company called Dead Proof. Dude. And he's also got a family, and which I'm about to have. So I know that we both have a lot of stuff going on, and he's just a nice guy. He crushes it, and we have different mantras, I think, but similar results. So Matt Berry for sure, cool dude. Who else on here? I would say Ryan and Sarah that own 815. They were the city of Manchester, they were one of the OGs as far as actual like cocktails go, and they've been open for just over 9 years. And 9 years for a cocktail bar that's on the second floor that you don't even see from the street is also amazing.
Yeah.
So they figured something out, and I want to know what it is.
Matt Berry and Ryan and Sarah, look out. I'm coming after you guys. Yeah. I'd love to get you on the show. And how can we connect with you? If we enjoyed today's conversation, maybe we want to come work for you. Maybe we want to just continue the chat. What's the best way to connect?
Yeah. Best way for sure is just to follow us on the socials. Industry is just Industry East Bar. And Stashbox is Stashbox NH, and you can get to the Instagram and the Facebook and the Google and all that stuff through each of those platforms. They'll all bring you one to the other. Like I said, best still that we've found, the best the best way is word of mouth.
Yeah.
So if you live around here, come see us. Yeah. If you're passing through Manchester Airport, come by and come see us and look us up and shoot us a like or follow and tell us that our shit looks bad and we'll try and fix it.
This has been a lot of fun, Dan. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, man.
I literally can't do what I do without people like you. You make it possible. I just ask questions. You're paying it forward. There is no questioning. You are unstoppable. Cheers.
Cheers.
There's another episode wrapped up here at Restaurant Unstoppable. Special thanks to my guest today, Dan Haggerty, for coming on and sharing your story. I am super excited for this restaurant group. Just two concepts out of the gates, 3 years in the city of Manchester, New Hampshire loves these guys. So I'm hoping to keep this relationship warm so I can continue to tell their story far into the future. And if you're enjoying this podcast and you want more like it, man, we have some great stuff coming your way. As of today, I am going to pick up my camper and I will be on the road in the month of March 2024. We're going to be taking this thing to the next level. We're going to be going deeper. We're going to be connecting with like serious badasses across the country, and we're going to do our best to connect them with you, the next generation of leaders. That's really what the mission here is at Restaurant Unstoppable. We're here to inspire, empower, and transform the industry. And the way we're doing that is by closing the knowledge gap and connecting this generation's leaders with the next generation leaders. So if you want to be a part of the next level of Restaurant Unstoppable, the way to do that is by heading to Facebook and joining our Unstoppable Restaurant Owners and Operators Facebook group. And we have a separate group, our community, where we're hosting all of our live events. And that is Restaurant Unstoppable Network. It's $47 a month, and you'll be able to connect and with my guests, ask your questions and grow your network and get access to me. So lots of exciting things happening here at Restaurant Unstoppable. We have some live events coming up. We have Tommy Bigneau from St. John's, or sorry, Mr. Paul's Supper Club. I always do that. I'm sorry, Tommy. And we have Johnny Zella, the COO of Condado Tacos. And we have Alan Fratty and Danny Azzarello, all going to be live in the network to answer your questions and to help get you to the next level. We would love to have you join those conversations. Again, just join our Facebook groups. And I do want to give a heads up. We are in the process of migrating restaurantunstoppable.com from WordPress, our website builder, to ClickFunnels. We're catching some snags. We hope to have it resolved soon, but just be patient with us. We're working really hard behind the scenes, and we just appreciate that patience. So that's it for today. Thank you to Jared Parisi for your copywriting and editing through Samadre Podcast, and thank you to Callan Miola, our community manager. We're taking it to the next level. Things are exciting. Until next time, peace out.